Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McCallan. Before we get into today's episode, I want to tell everyone about the upcoming ACB holiday auction. This exciting auction will be broadcasting live from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Sunday, December 8th, on all live streams of ACB Radio. So tune in for that. It's a fun auction, and all proceeds support ACB Radio. Now back to today's Speaking Out for the Blind episode. According to NBC's Today Show, Pat Leahy was born prematurely with Leber congenital amaurosis, or LCA. The Foundation Fighting Blindness says that LCA is an inherited retinal degenerative disease. The disease is characterized by severe vision loss at birth. Pat's severe vision loss hasn't stopped him from having a very active and extraordinary life. The Washington Post reports that, as a child, Pat did many curricular and extracurricular activities, just like other young boys. Mr. Leahy attended a regular elementary school and was mainstreamed. He also competed on the gymnastics and swimming teams and played flashlight tag with his brother in the family backyard. Pat continued his active life into adulthood. He wrestled in Millersville, University of Pennsylvania's nationally recognized Division I program, and was elected as the school's Student Senate President. Mr. Leahy's interest in politics and government prompted him to begin his professional career on Capitol Hill. He worked as a staffer for U.S. Senator Fred Thompson of Tennessee and Representative J.C. Watts of Oklahoma in 1997. And according to his LinkedIn page, Pat has held several political positions over the years. During the 2000s, Mr. Leahy worked with the U.S. Department of Commerce. He was a special assistant and director of legislative and intergovernmental affairs for the Secretary of Commerce's office. Pat has been the senior advisor at the U.S. Election Assistance Commission since 2009. He's worked with state and local governments to improve election conditions for all Americans. Outside of the political world, Pat loves to read, swim, and help the nation's wounded warriors, and he is an avid baseball fan and an amateur bodybuilder. Mr. Leahy's bodybuilding pursuit is profiled in his new documentary entitled Blind Lifter. Here to talk about the film, his life, and what you can do to become the next star athlete or politician is Mr. Pat Leahy himself. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thanks a lot for having me, Brian. Thank you, and welcome to all your listeners. It's an honor to be profiled, and thank you so much for that generous introduction. It was great.
Thank you. Pat, let's start by talking about your childhood. I was reading an article that was featured on you in the Washington Post, and I learned that you were born on December 19th, 1973, 6 months after you were born. Your mother noticed that something wasn't right. So you and your mom went to a few doctors. After 3 visits, the physicians diagnosed you with LCA. And as I said earlier, it's a degenerative retinal disease. How did LCA affect your eyesight? And how is your vision today?
Well, LCA, I'm sure you have some parents, a bunch of parents listening out there, and you know, those early years, I obviously don't remember going to the doctors, you know, when I was 6 months old, 9 months old, but my parents worked really hard to find experts and to find people that could diagnose, you know, what were some issues, what was going on here, and they found out through some of the experts at Johns Hopkins Hospital that, yeah, indeed it was LCA. It was really, you know, pretty rare, and we're kind of given a gloomy outlook by the doctors, because I think doctors do amazing work, but sometimes they're not the best at presenting, you know, hey, here's what can be, you know, here's the possibilities. And they did have people that were doing that and along the way. So my vision when I was younger is maybe you could categorize it 4 or 5% of what, you know, vision that most folks would have. And I'd say today down to maybe 1%, it's kind of diminished quite a bit. It's still somewhat usable for me as far as, you know, seeing the sunrise or seeing the sunset. I used to be able to see colors, but they've kind of diminished quite a bit. But, you know, over the years, it's been my folks kind of a team effort to figure out you know, kind of the state of LCA. I've been working with Foundation Fighting Blindness a bit and other organizations to try to make sure that we kind of advance the cause. You know, we got to push the envelope and look at cures as well. But while we're doing that, we got to live. So, you know, it's been a journey with LCA, but I know we're making great progress.
By the time you had turned 6, you became angry about your blindness. Your mom understood all of your frustrations, and she said that you needed to find some activities to do. How did you follow your mother's advice?
She and my dad and my brother, from early on, allowed me that time to be sad, you know, the time to be angry. And I think that, in my view, that has to happen. It can't be prolonged, but you need to get it out. And they allowed me to do that, but then were the ones there that would say, hey, Pat, okay, but we need to live. We need to move on. And let's be active in school. Let's be active in the neighborhood. In my case, it was, hey, if you like to swim, which I did, let's join the summer swim team and see how you like it. But they would never make the decision for me. It was, well, there is a swim team down the street. The coach said he'd like to have you. Do you want to do it? And I vividly remember sitting on my folks' sofa and everybody sitting around saying, well, do you want to call the coach and tell him? And I was probably 6 years old. I said, I'm going to call coach. So I give him a call and said, I'm in. And I vividly remember that kind of a cool point for me in starting athletics and how much it would enhance everything across the board for me.
How did you learn to do all the strokes in swimming, and how did you do on the team?
Strokes in swimming was a little tricky at first. We had some good coaches. I think you find that coaches are generally very receptive to working with people who are blind or have just about any disability. Sometimes have to educate them a bit, so that's my job, and that was my parents' job, and they would kind of take me out of the water and, you know, feel my hand and say, all right, now here's how a freestyle stroke should be, and can I bring it up your side, and you would be reaching out forward, and then I would go and do it, and they would say, okay, well, change this a little bit or change that, and they really kind of worked with me to get the strokes to where they needed to be. And then I did some winter swimming as well, which is a little more intense, so they would refine the strokes even more. But swimming, I was an average swimmer. I did it summer swim league from 1st to 12th grade, just kind of a fun social thing, competitive but fun. And then winter, I did winter swimming from 3rd through 7th grade, and I was in the middle of the pack. It was great, and my stroke was breaststroke, and freestyle I liked a lot as well. So it was good. It allowed me to mingle with the other kids a lot. And make a lot of friends. During the summer, it was like the core of my social life, getting to the pool and practice, and then we just hang around all day. This is before you're working during the day. So it was a lot of just fun times at the pool.
How'd you learn to do gymnastics?
Gymnastics was something that just came about through my elementary school gym teacher, Tom Taylor. He just had an open mind for working with me and my brother, who's 5 years older than me, my brother Bill, kind of worked at the gym teacher, just saying, my brother can do just about anything in here. And I kind of took to gymnastics, different things, real basic stuff in elementary school gym class. And then we had a gymnastics club down the street named Rebounders. And I got hooked up with them, and there was a class specifically for kids with disabilities. Went to that class for a couple months, and it was really, really great class. But the coach, Mel Sanborn, who's just a good buddy and still a good friend, went to my mom and said, "Yeah, this is great, but we're gonna jump Pat up to the competing class, so that would just be mainstream gymnastics. So how do you feel about that?" My mom, I think, was scared, but was like, "Okay, if you think that's what we should do," and we did it. And I think, let's see, I was competing in gymnastics by 8th grade.
We're going to take a little break from the extracurricular sports, and we're going to talk about backyard sports, because as your father and brother encourage you to participate in the same activities as other side children, including your mother, we can't forget your mother. For instance, you played backyard football with the neighborhood kids, and you earned this reputation for being a bull rusher. What's a bull rusher? And how did you earn that reputation?
We developed a system growing up where he put a thin plastic helmet on me. And I probably started backyard football at 10, 11 years old. And I think it was another one where my parents were like, "Okay." And my brother was like, "I've got it. Don't worry. It'll be fine." And there's probably a group of six or so of us in the neighborhood that would just get together and play football. And with that thick helmet, or that helmet that gave me protection, I had a little more, less fear, I think, of going out there. So I would just put my head down and run right through the line, you know, and we would, it was the constant play, just, you know, give the ball to Pat, let him run up the middle. And I think a couple of times I got stopped by a tree, or maybe we had a thing in the backyard called a fort, which is like a bunch of plywood put up to make a pretty neat room out back. But I know one time I got misdirected and ran right through the plywood.
Ooh.
But you know, I had no injury. It's just everything. Just when you're 12 years old, it's just fun. So, but yeah, it was. You know, I would just encourage your listeners out there. You know, parents that have the kids that with different disabilities, blindness, that just let them go in the backyard. And you know, if as long as it's safe, as long as it's safe. Bottom line, safe. But I learned so much from those days. You know, not only is it a social experience, you get camaraderie and a good time.
And I agree with you about the safety. And also, too, we're going to get into a little bit further later on in this interview about some of the legislation that's been put on the table about getting kids involved, kids with disabilities involved in PE and extracurricular sports at their schools. So we'll get into that in a little bit, but you're listening to Speaking Out for the Blind, and my guest is Pat Leahy. He's the star politician and bodybuilder. You went to Millersville University of Pennsylvania. You wrestled for the school's nationally recognized Division I team, and you even were the school student senate president, and you won. How did you do on that wrestling team?
And what did you do?
In office as student senate president?
Both great questions. So wrestling, I went there knowing they were Division I, and I was an average high school wrestler. So I went there, really enjoyed my time on the team. I was a middle-of-the-road wrestler, but loved the experience. It was awesome. I never, I didn't crack the starting lineup, but I wrestled many tournaments and filled in when I could, and it was just great. I mean, it was really, the guys on the team were just fantastic, and coach, and kind of all the doors that open when you're doing that. And I also think wrestling in college helped my grades, because I'm forced to have a really strict schedule. You know, I know where I'm going to be all the time. So I think in many cases, sports can kind of lift all boats, at least for me. And then by the time I got about midway through, I got involved with Student Senate, realized that I did like politics, and joined the Senate, and then a year or so in, ran for vice president, we won, and then a year later ran for president, and it was a pretty competitive election, beat an incumbent, and there were four of us ran, and I got over 50%, so that was great, and I just thought, this is fantastic, and I ran on kind of opening the Senate up and bringing it closer to the students. I also ran on not increasing what was basically our taxes, which was a student activity fee. And we were able to do quite a bit of that. And it was a great experience, a great leadership experience. You realize that often a lot of the decisions, you were the one that had to make the decision. So that was new for me as far as leading an organization. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great.
Those first interests in government led you to make the move to Washington, and you worked for Senator Fred Thompson, Republican from Tennessee, and you worked for Representative J.C. Watts from Oklahoma. Both of them are Republican. What were some of your experiences working with these two high-profile politicians?
Working for Senator Thompson and for Mr. Watts, just great experience for someone who was 23 to probably... I worked on Capitol Hill from probably about 23 to about when I was about 30. And fast-paced environment, learn how to communicate better with folks, brevity, how to summarize kind of what might be a complex issue into something that's about one page of writing, working with constituents to make sure they have what they need, working with members of Congress, especially working with J.C. Watts. I was lucky to have a job where I sat right outside his door for 2 years, and he was chairman of the conference, so all members would come to us for information and talking points and research, and I did a lot of that for him, and it was fast-paced, you know, eating lunch at 3 o'clock in the afternoon type job, but it was great.
Finally, after you left the senator and the representative, you looked for additional challenges and you became involved with issues that are important to the disabled. You started your current role as the U.S. Election Assistance Commission's senior advisor, and you're currently working with local and state governments to improve the election conditions for the disabled. How have you improved election conditions for these members of the population?
Well, I when I was on the Hill the last couple of years, I helped write the Help America Vote Act, which is for kind of following Florida 2000, a good opportunity to improve election accessibility for everyone. And we had some specific provisions in there for people with disabilities. Then I took some time and worked for the Secretary of Commerce in his office, and worked on trade and economic development, other issues. And then I went back to the elections work at the commission. They needed some help, especially running a grant program, which is about an $8 million program to work with state and locals on improving access for folks with disabilities. And we're about two years into that grant and seen some great progress, some R&D development for future machines, ways to work with poll workers, ways that poll workers can work with folks with disabilities. Been a good experience and a great chance to kind of lead an effort to help lots of folks out there. You know, because when you look at it, really voting is the bottom line for democracy, for being involved.
Well, we're on politics. Your new documentary, Blind Lifter, which we're going to really get into detail soon, it attempts to increase the number of students with disabilities who participate in the school-based athletic programs by addressing two recent federal government reports and actions. One of these reports that was published a few years ago in 2010 tells of how the U.S. Department of Education can assist the states and schools with providing more guidance and information to improve the opportunities in athletics and physical education for disabled students. Tell me more about the report.
Well, you're right on the money there. General Accountability Office, a couple years ago, was directed by Congress to look into, are we doing everything we can to help students with disabilities, first in physical education class and then as well outside of school? Is this all it can be? And they came back and basically said, look, in physical education class, we're doing okay. We're doing pretty well. However, outside of school or school-based athletic programs, community-based athletic programs, kids with disabilities are up to 56% less likely to be involved. for a variety of reasons, but we need to do better. And as we've talked about a bit here today, I've noticed, at least in my life, that being involved in sports, a club, playing the marching band, whatever it might be, outside of school or school-based, helped me across the board. You know, helped me with academics. It helped me with making friends. It helped me with getting out of the house and just living life. So that's what they kind of looked at, was how can we, what are the ways that government, that community-based programs can help get first through 12th grade students into extracurricular athletics. And I think you could extend that further to be, you know, if you're just not into athletics, it could be, as I said, it could be a musical instrument. It could be art. It could be sculpture. It could be all kinds of stuff. So how can we improve these numbers? We have to do it. I think we'll see exponential results from doing it. So that's what GAO came back with. And then recently, the Department of Education in January came out with basically followed that General Accountability Office report and said, hey, here's some guidance to the states. We got to do this. We got to jump on this and advance the ball. So they've put some guidance out there. Schools are on notice that they need to do make more of an effort on the extracurricular sports and get kids involved.
So the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights responded to that report in January of this year, 2013. By clarifying the legal obligations for school districts to provide the access extracurricular sports for students with disabilities. How did the department do this, and do they plan to address the same obligation for PE classes as well?
I don't know the details and want to get involved more with policy on the ground. I don't know the details. I know that they have been active and kind of getting guidance out there and getting the kind of the main theme out there to schools across the country that we want to make sure there's every opportunity for, you know, a kid who might be blind or a kid who might be in a wheelchair to play a sport. If they want to play, let's find a way.
You've worked to maintain the rest of your body. You've eaten well, you've lost weight, and you've fallen into this regular routine of weightlifting. You work out for over 2 hours, 5 days a week at the Washington Sports Club, which is located also on Capitol Hill. How did you decide to lift weights and get into this special routine?
I started weight training toward the end of high school and quickly fell into it and realized that this is something I really enjoy doing. I'm sure our listeners out there, it's something that you really enjoy doing. You know, it's just, you just fall into it. You're really in sync when you do it, and you feel great after you do it. So for me, weight training was that thing, also combined with athletics, you know, whether it be going for a run or swim or whatever it might be. But the weight room just really spoke to me. And we just went to the gym through my 20s. And then one day when I was probably about 30, I realized there's got to be more than just coming in the gym and working out. It's fun, get to talk to my buddies and work out, but maybe there's something more here. So one day it just popped in my head. I said, wow, maybe we could do a documentary about me training for a bodybuilding competition. Really not knowing what I was getting myself into with, one, making a documentary, or two, doing a bodybuilding competition. But I forged forward and did a show, my first show when I was 36 in 2010, and it was a learning experience, but did well and started filming a little bit for the documentary. And then really got engaged over the past about 18 months. Did another show in May of this year and got some pros on board with doing the film. But it's been, you know, exercise of finding what works. Like, for example, I had some pretty significant injuries back in 2008, 2009, and then came back again in 2011. And I had to find the trainers that could make me healthy again. And I found them through Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning. They're out of Boston. But I mobily trained with a coach there named Kevin Carr. They were able to bring me back from not being able to lift at all, being in pain and just not being able to lift, to being the strongest I've ever been.
So tell me all about your experience working on Blind Lifter, your brand new documentary You're working with filmmaker Janar Stewart to create the movie and inspire the kids and adults with disabilities to participate in sports. How does Blind Lifter help in accomplishing this goal, and where can all of our listeners see the new film, and how?
Yeah, so, yeah, Janar Stewart is our director. We have a number of other folks that have been working with us. You can go to our website, which is www.blindlifter.com. We're going to be updating there when we're ready to release. We're not at the release point yet, but we're going to be ready next year, probably early in the year. It's going to be a shorter film, mainly because right now I don't have the resources to fund a full length hour plus documentary. But we are hoping that we can get it in front of as many classes and teams and folks out there with different disabilities to inspire them to go for their dreams. It might not be in the weight room, but it might be in the classroom, or it might be on the athletic field, maybe running or swimming or gymnastics. So we're going to use it as a tool. Janar, our director, had the idea. I mean, she was the one who looked at my life and was researching everything and said, well, there's this large group of kids out there that have disabilities that maybe we could help. And then I looked at the numbers. I went, I think it's like 56,000 plus kids with vision loss across the country. And then there's just all kinds of numbers. I mean, it's I think about 6-7 million kids with different disabilities first through 12th grade. And I saw a study the other day that was over 10 million kids with some kind of developmental disability issues. So, I mean, the numbers are kind of all over the place, but we do know one thing. There's a lot of people out there that are just kind of looking for things that can help them. And I've been there, certainly, when I was a student in first through 12th grade and even college, just kind of looking for resources, looking for things. And I know that everyone has their hearts in the right place, everybody. So let's figure out a way to move these numbers. I mentioned this number from the General Accountability Office, 56% less likely for students with disabilities to participate in sports. We got to do better than that.
How can our listeners learn just more about you?
Sure. Probably the best way is to go through the website, which is www.blindlifter.com. There's also a link there to email me. So just feel free, drop me an email. I'm very accessible. Love to chat with anybody that wants to give me an email, and it's easy right there. Just go through the website and get a hold of me. I'm also on LinkedIn and Facebook, and so if anybody wants to reach out, love to chat and help in any way I can, and see if I can point you in a direction or give some workout guidance, whatever might be helpful.
Note, folks, that you may email Pat Leahy at pat.r.leahy@gmail.com. Great. So, Pat, our listeners will be definitely checking out your new film. And your ultimate strength as a bodybuilder, government official, and just a person full of life are truly awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Brian. And to everyone out there, thanks so much for listening. And just please, if you want to get in touch, reach out.
Before we go, let me give listeners a quick reminder. I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode or past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speaking Out Blind. Or log on to the new Speaking Out for the Blind show website at home.comcast.net/tildemcallen3. That's MCCALLEN, the number 3. You may also email me at mcallen3@comcast.net. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.